taking time to actually figure out who the students are and letting them be honest about what they really care about without trying to impress you. I think a lot of times we have learners who aren't ready to really look at themselves and see what they're interested in. And giving them that time and space to be a little bit vulnerable, to say, no, I really like this. No one told me that I should like this. This is what matters to me. That helps us kind of bridge or start bridging that path, making that path to the content. It's not, I'm going to fit the content to the learner. It's finding out who the learner is first, and then let's build a bridge to the content.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray. This is where I have conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents all about their passion to transform teaching and learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I have someone special here today. It's Mike Mohammed. I'm so excited he's here because we've actually scheduled this twice and things happened and we both were persistent. We needed to talk, but I want you to learn a little bit about Mike first. Mike is a high school science teacher in Elmbrook School District in Wisconsin. He's passionate, very passionate about personalizing learning for all of his students. And he writes the greatest blog post called Mo Physics, Mo Problems. Isn't that a great name? It's all about his journey to personalized learning and building his PLN. Lucky me, I'm part of Mike's PLN, and I really wanted to learn more, so I invited him to join me in a conversation. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you, Barbara. I really feel like I'm the lucky one. I came across your books when I first started getting into this journey of personalizing learning for students, and to have you first follow me on Twitter and then all of a sudden want to talk to me in person or video wise it's really an honor. Amazing.
Oh, I love it. So I just want to tell everyone, when I do the podcast, we have a video going on. You won't see and see what I see, but we're going to be grabbing pictures and others of Mike and his story. And, you know, let's tell about your story. Can you share a little bit about you and your background and maybe why you went into teaching?
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, a smaller town. Both my parents immigrated from Pakistan, and they're very different. My mom, because, you know, she grew up in the early 2000s, and she was never allowed to go to school a day in her life. So she never went to school a day in her life, as opposed to my dad, who was the first in his family to graduate from college. He went on to medical school and became a pediatrician. So really two completely opposite ends of the spectrum there. But when I was born, and throughout my schooling, I was always very good at school, very disciplined, good at the game, as we say, of school, and, you know, really followed the path that they had set out for me that, you know, being an immigrant kid, okay, you're either going to be a doctor or you're going to be an engineer. And eventually, you know, I would do work in school that would basically take me down that path because I was supposed to. And it wasn't until I finally got to college and learned a little bit more about myself and the path that I had been on that I realized, oh, I don't really like this. And that's when I started making that connection for myself. And when I realized school has got to be about more than just doing what someone tells you to do. With that, there has to be some place for us in this world or some space for us to find out a little bit more about what we want to do with our lives. And, you know, and that's kind of what led me down this path of trying to make school a little bit more about the learner as opposed to about all these external influences on them.
Wow. I have to say, I went down the same path as you, but not the same way. I really felt that school just, it was so wrong for so many kids, especially me. And so I felt like very early on, just like you, something had to change.
Yes.
And it's really cool about that. So is that why, you know, you became a teacher?
Yes. Now, so, I mean, it became, well, actually, I started with the idea of becoming an English teacher because my favorite course in high school is actually creative writing because, you know, you have that control. I'm going to write my stories. I'm going to do what I want to. And then once I got into college, it was like, oh, these science classes are really neat. I'm actually doing some hands-on laboratories and things like that, and it's pretty exciting. So that's kind of where that shift took place, where I said, oh, you know, I really like this science education. I think we could probably do something better with it at the high school level. And kind of getting into that as a teacher really kind of made me make that connection there.
Ah, I get it. See, that's the same thing with me. I didn't really come to who I was until I got to college. I just did what everyone told me to do. I knew how to do school till I could get out of school. And then yes. When I got into college, I found somebody who actually believed in me. Is that what happened to you?
Well, you know, I think it was more that, you know, I finally felt like I had the freedom to take that leap and to listen to myself and, okay, and just recognize this is who I am and that is perfectly fine. And I think once I kind of brought the idea to my parents, they realized, oh, this is going to make him happy. This is great. He's going to be happy. He's going to be secure because not knowing what different careers are out there that are for a person, and they have a very narrow frame of mind of what success looks like in terms of security, economic security, but also emotional security. And the idea that I was happy and was going to be well off, you know, better for it. So they're very pleased with my career choice.
So you live close to your family or?
Yes. Yeah, they. I live in Brown Deer, which is a suburb of Milwaukee, so we're about 45 minutes away. So anytime, you know, a couple of times a year, just a quick drive up the road. I live with my wife, and we do have a puppy. Actually, not a puppy. Gosh, she's going to be 14 years old in December.
What kind of dog?
She's a golden doodle.
My favorite.
Yes, and she's adorable. And, you know, instead of going on a honeymoon, we got a dog, and it's perfect, perfect. And I actually have the same birthday as my dog, not in years, but in the same birthday. We're both December 24th babies.
So. Oh, right before the holidays. Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
Yes.
So I have had goldens. I've always wanted a golden doodle. So we'll have to get a picture of your dog.
Yes, I will definitely make sure you get one.
A boy, girl, what's the name?
A girl. Her name is Georgia.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. Well, they'll have to see. I can't wait.
Yes.
I want a dog so bad. I had dogs for so long, and right now I have a cat. That I have to say cats are different.
Oh, yeah. Very different.
So, you know, you've mentioned a little bit about teaching science in high school, but what is the best thing about it?
Well, you know, I really think the best thing about doing science is we can really make it hands-on. And it's not that hard of a leap to make learning hands-on for students. And that's really fantastic that, you know, I think it's a great place for students to take risks. And when we talk about this idea of engineering and designing stuff, I think it's really fantastic that, for me at least, I see the world through science, and it's easy for me to make those connections to learning, for science at least, in my opinion.
Oh, I love it. So, you know, I'm doing a lot on design thinking now, so it seems to me that you're probably doing that and may not even know it.
Yes.
You want to challenge the kids.
Yeah, definitely do want to challenge them.
So, well, we're going to find out more because you've reached out to me and Kathleen about what is personalized learning, and you wanted to know more, and everything we shared with you turned around and did it in your class right away, right?
Yes.
So why is it so important for you to personalize learning?
Well, you know, I think it comes down to, I think my, kind of like when I think about my why statement, it's really when I think about back when I was a kid, just doing things to do them. And this is one of those things that resonates with me is that I cannot tell you a single thing I did in my physics class in high school. I can tell you one day we went to Great America and that was fantastic. That was the best day. And why was it great? Because I cared about it, because it meant something to me. And trying to really have students realize that this word physics, that when I polled them, 90% of them have no clue what it means when they're taking my class Why are you taking physics? Well, my guidance counselor told me to. I needed a science credit. And by the end of the course, I want them to be able to see that, oh, physics connects to my life. Not just the world at large, but what I do is physics. I live physics daily. I may have never realized it before, but whenever I take a step, whenever I do play my favorite video game or play my favorite sport, it's physics.
Well, I'll just tell you real quick. I taught adult school. I taught gifted kids. I did other things too, but this is one of them. And one of them, I worked for, it was the junior astronaut group. And I taught physics to gifted kids, grades 3 through 5. And that was I still to this day remember some of the activities and about perspective and force and motion and all of the fun things like that, that when I started working with high schools and they had to develop problems around force and motion, I just went, I have them. I just have to kind of change them a little bit and get them to think about it, because it's about them. You mentioned the hands-on. It has to be hands-on.
Oh, yeah. It definitely does. You know, it's one thing for me to be doing it for them, but if they don't feel it, if they're not doing it themselves, manipulating what they're doing, it's not science. It's not personal to them.
Well, you mentioned some things to me before. You know, everyone's different. And one of the things that is hard for kids is because they use that word, I can't do it. And you mentioned that you try to help them build the why for learning.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the biggest things is at the beginning of the year, that why is taking time to actually figure out who the students are and letting them be honest about what they really care about without trying to impress you. I think a lot of times we have learners who aren't ready to really look at themselves and see what they're interested in. And giving them that time and space to be a little bit vulnerable, to say, no, I really like this. No one told me that I should like this. This is what matters to me. That helps us kind of start bridging that path, making that path to the content. It's not, I'm going to fit the content to the learner. It's finding out who the learner is first, and then let's build a bridge to the content. And my place as a professional is as someone who's more of an expert in physics than they are, gives me that I have that skill, but they need to first be able to talk about who they are.
So when you do that, and you're working with high school, I mean, you must have a lot of kids, right?
Yeah. So we're on the block. So I have students for half a year and then we switch over. So right now I have 3 blocks with a total of 90 students.
How do you get to know all that many kids?
Well, you know, I think the very first day, you know, it's something that's evolved over time. We used to have like a getting to know you sheet that they would turn in. But I think one of the biggest tools has been doing a couple things. One of the very first things we do is we start them building a digital portfolio using Google Sites. And the very first thing we do is, first day, we have them build a passion page. And the great thing about this new version of Google Sites is it's really easy to embed YouTube videos right in that page. So first day of school, we say, okay, find 4 videos on YouTube that talk about who you are personally, or your passions, or where you want to go in your life, or what you do with your free time outside of school. Embed those in there and just write a little paragraph about how these connect to you as a person. Not necessarily as a learner, but as a person first. And the ability for me to just look through those, and they're always entertaining. I learn new songs. I laugh at some of the cat videos they put in, but it's really a chance for me to see, oh, that's who you are beyond these grades and this schedule that you have every day.
Wow, that sounds like fun.
It is. It really is.
So if they have a portfolio and they're building those videos and they're writing and reflecting about them, then they keep that portfolio and keep adding to it all through the year?
Yeah, so we'll come back to it. And one of the things we also build in there that you've been nice enough to share with me that I've been working with for a while is the idea of that learner profile piece, that they eventually look at themselves as a learner as well. So passion page, we kind of come back to, and it's interesting. At the end of the term, we've been in school for 9 weeks, and we were finalizing the portfolio for the year. So it was interesting to hear a couple of students go back and look at those videos and say, oh my gosh, that's who I was back then. I need to update a couple of these. And, you know, they do. But I say, okay, don't get rid of the old ones. If you want to put new ones in, that's fine. But let's not get rid of the old ones. And then in addition to the passions, the portfolio also includes standards or evidence towards meeting different standards that we have in the classroom.
Okay, so I can see that you're really getting them more involved with their own learning.
Yes, yeah. You know, I think one of the things when I introduced this portfolio is talking about when I applied for my job as a teacher, I needed a portfolio. So this is not just something you're doing in class and it's never going to go away anywhere. Like we do some science experiments where you may never need to use this skill ever again, but this skill of being able to create a portfolio about yourself, present artifacts, and defend those is a lifelong skill. I didn't just have to do it to get my job. I have to do it to keep my job. You know, and every job, everyone has to provide evidence and defend themselves or advocate for themselves.
Pretty cool that you're doing that. I'm wondering what grades you do teach.
So it's in physics. It's 10th graders through seniors. So it's a mix in each class.
So they'll need a portfolio even if they want any career or college. They'll need something to demonstrate who they are.
Oh, yeah.
What do they tell you about that when they're doing them?
Well, I think it's really interesting that, you know, at first, I think of the first couple of years I used to do this, students kind of felt it was more like, okay, this is just like a checklist. But as the tools have gotten more powerful, they've been able to be more creative in how they design and put things together and put more of themselves instead of when you think about like a Google document. A document is just really text as opposed to I can put pictures, I can have fun with this and show myself beyond the written word. And it's been really, really exciting to see.
Well, they can turn around and use that because they can take that with them.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it's out there at the Google sites, which is great.
Once they publish it, it's out there.
And it's theirs. So so that's another thing. They probably have to watch what they do because we know kids.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're really building a culture of learning in your class. I mean, that's what it's very apparent that, one, the kids probably just run to your class. They wanted to. I mean, high school, usually the kids are like, you know, I'm just here for my friends and I'm going to get out and go to college or do whatever I want to after, you know, but here you're making it so they really get to know who they are.
Oh, well, I'm trying to, you know, it's a work in progress. And, you know, every year I get to do just a little bit more or tweak something. So over time, it's been getting better and better. But, you know, it's little incremental changes at a time.
Well, one thing I found from a lot of teachers that are changing the way they do this, they have student voice. They really got the kids to tell them what they're doing and what they could improve. And it's like showing your vulnerabilities. You're okay because it's transparent. You're trying to improve what you're doing, but so they can improve what they do.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. I that learner voice piece is huge. You know, I can have a grand plan and do something. But, you know, it's getting that temperature reading. If I'm doing so, I want my lessons to be purposeful for the learners and I don't get their input, that is pointless. You know, it's how can we make this class better for you? It's about you. It's not about me. I'm not going to sit back and say, oh, that lesson went great. This is a perfect lesson. It is, how is the experience on the other end? It's not about me. It's about them.
So, you know, you're saying the right things to me, right? can you tell me a little bit about some of the projects that you do with your kids?
Yeah, you know, I think, well, the biggest project that I've been working on, trying to get better and better is, and a lot of people are doing these Genius Hour projects. And, you know, I decided to do it in my class as well as basically a passion project that we basically start with. Again, this whole idea that I said that it's about the learner, that they choose something that they're interested in, and it's my job to help them find the physics behind it. And it's something we'll work on for the rest of this school year, a little bit at a time for this whole term. And by the end of it, they've got something to present. And instead of having a final exam, instead of that final exam time, the night before exams, we'll have an expo where they're going to set up at tables and it's open to the community. Parents will come in, students will come in, and students will be responsible for presenting their learning to a general audience.
Do you have all the classes together?
Yes, I do. So what I ended up doing the first year, and it kind of works pretty well, is that I kind of split the class in half, like all my 90 students. So 45 will present for the first half of the expo, and then they'll flip roles, just because I want them to have a chance to be the audience as well, so that they can ask questions about their fellow learners rather than, I think a lot of the times what we used to do or what I used to do, okay, it's the end of the term, you've done your project, now present to the whole class. And I think that kind of limits the amount of people that can experience their work. And I really like this bigger venue type of option.
I could tell you a little bit about me with showcases. I go a little crazy with them. I try to get, I've gotten in trouble by doing them at a district office without getting permission. So, but I just think it's really important to showcase your work, especially seniors.
Yes.
I mean, especially high school learners who are, you know, and you're giving them these opportunities to have a voice. Why not give them a bigger voice?
Yes, yes. And, you know, it's great for the parents to be able to see that work too. You know, that idea that the work goes beyond just a poster that you take home, that the parents can actually talk to their student about their learning and that they can see what other people are doing as well.
Oh, I love it that you're involving the parents, especially high school. Usually middle and high school, you lose the parents. They think, well, the kids are on their own. They're doing fine. The teacher can do the work. But when you involve them, they get it. They get it and they
yes.
see what the kids are doing, especially on a passion project. They're probably going home and excited to talk about it instead of saying nothing, did nothing, you know. I love it. So I want to talk because you're very active on social media like I am. I always tend to send you things. I don't know if you've noticed.
Yes.
So it's called a Personal Learning Network, the PLN. And why does it matter so much to you?
Well, you know, I think... And I love getting on social media and love listening to podcasts because a lot of times our learning, and when I think about before I got on the internet, my learning was limited to the building I was in. And this is kind of developing this network outside of your buildings about breaking down those walls to see what's going on at the edges of innovation, not just hearing these buzzwords, but the ability to get those resources, see what it looks like, see pictures from other classrooms, see these projects that other people are doing and steal those ideas, you know, take them, make them my own and actually bring them home instead of just saying, oh, well, I can walk around, see what's going on next door, but have no idea what's going on outside of there because like I said, it's these buzzwords that you hear, and that kind of gets a negativity if you don't know what it actually means or what it actually looks like.
Well, I love you. You said edges of innovation. I think that might be the title of this. Really good. You're coming up with some great buzzwords yourself,
oh,
I have to tell you. I love it. So I went to your blog. I love the title of it. Mo Physics, Mo Problems. I don't know where you got that. It must be something to do with your name. Anyway, and you have a few that I found. There might be new ones up there, but I just kind of want to talk a little about a few of them. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
Well, you had one. What did you mean about becoming a matchmaker? That caught my eye, you know.
Yes. Well, I think... As my role, like I said before, you know, I'm the expert at the content and it's my job to basically wed the student with the content in a way that can ignite their passions, you know, without making it too romantic of anything. But really, the student has these passions and it's my job to show them that, hey, you know, physics has the exact same passions that you're interested in. Let's bring you two together. Now, they may have no idea what physics means, but the idea that you have a student who's interested in photography, hey, Physics is all about lenses. It's all about light. It's all about color. Let's make that marriage happen, you know? And it's my job as a physics professional, as a physics expert, to help find those connections. It's not my job to tell them what they're interested in. It's not my job to tell my students, okay, this lab you need to know for sure. We need to do this because all these other students are doing the exact same lab. They need to understand physics, and the ability to make that match between the two of them is really what I'm all about.
Wow. That's so cool. I mean, because I love science, and I love, you know, I try to tell, I have a granddaughter, I even talk to her about even with math, how beautiful math is, and just walking outside and said, oh, there's Fibonacci. And she's like, what? You know, I just feel that learning, it never ends. If you really instill that love of learning, they start seeing things in a different way.
Yes, exactly. And isn't that what we're trying to do? You know, it's one thing to create lifelong learners, but students who are interested in learning, not just know how to learn, but want to learn more.
Yes. And it is really exciting when they're like that and you can't get them to stop and your bell rings and they don't want to go.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I love that. Yeah. So you had one on standards and, you know, people are moving to competency-based, but you still have to meet the standards. So you had a blog called Overarching Standards to Drive Personalization, right? Do you remember that one?
Uh-huh. I definitely do.
So you want to tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah. You know, as a district, well, actually, when this journey kind of started a couple of years ago, we've been realigning our science curriculum to the next generation science standards over time. And I think what we're realizing is that the best standards that meet the needs of all learners are ones that are skill focused, the ones that aren't super, super narrow about content knowledge, because that really allows us to find the way in for the learners. And it connects more to these things like habits of mind beyond just a simple fact. They really focus on things like actually being able to collaborate with other people. And it's really interesting to see that in some of the next generation science standards with the practices. It's not just about being able to work alone. Some of them include the idea of being able to work collaboratively with others to solve problems. So being able to highlight those and recognize that they're there, to not minimize those, will help really build in these habits of minds that we want for all of our learners. And another thing I would say is we really need to, as we adopt these new standards, really look at your targets and make sure, learning targets, and make sure you're emphasizing these and don't just skim them as, oh, let's forget about that word. Where's my content word? Where's my definition, my great physics words, my velocities, my forces, and ignore everything else that the standards say.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm going to have to go back and read that and then share some of, I mean, that'll be nice to share some of the things that you wrote in there also. And I'm going to end with one. The last one was practices in the classroom are practices for life.
Yes. You know, I think that's really, you know, too often it's really easy for me to get bogged down in what the students are doing in terms of being able to understand what they're basically doing. I think this gets back to this idea of habits of mind and, you know, really making them a part of the daily life and making sure that students really understand what we're saying when we say habits of mind, that it is being able to work with a group, being able to fail, being able to pick yourself up when you fail, being able to know about your learning. And once they're away from me, these are really practices for life. It's one thing to apply them to physics, but it's another thing to apply them to anything you want to do. Are you resilient enough when you have a leak or your sink isn't turning on? Are you just going to call the plumber? Or are you going to take a couple of minutes and go through those habits of mind to realize, okay, what steps did I take in my classroom? How can I find out more about this? I can go to YouTube. I can figure out a little bit more about it. I can research and actually look at how reliable is this source of information that I'm getting on the internet when I look up, is my dog sick? You know, these things like that before you act and act outside of your sphere. Can you try to problem solve within your sphere before you need to go to seek help elsewhere? And that's, you know, something that could save you money in the long term.
Well, it also makes you self-directed, independent learner that we were talking about earlier. And it's like, what we want, I have children and I have a grand. We really want them to be independent and self-directed, or they keep coming home.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We really want them to have a life on their own. And if we can prepare them for that, it's so wonderful if they can also take responsibility to prepare themselves for that.
Yes, yes.
So I love the way you wrote that. I wish I had longer time because we could go on and on. And you know, I'll get you back on here.
I'd be happy to, of course.
Was there anything else that I didn't touch on that you just feel like you have to say?
Well, I do have to say, you know, we didn't talk about really how your work and Kathleen's work really cracked personalized learning for not just me, but I think for everyone in my building. You know, personalizing learning, it can seem like something that's really overwhelming. But once I started reading your books and saw that they use the Universal Design for Learning frameworks as the lens through which we can personalize, that really cracked the code for all of us and made us go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Well, yeah, of course. It's not big hoops. It didn't seem as overwhelming when we looked at it through how are we going to engage the learner? How are we going to make the content accessible? And how are we going to provide them multiple ways to express it based on their needs? So that was really the key moment that I think that really flipped a switch for not just myself, but we've done book studies at my building. In our PLCs, I kind of like spearheaded, okay, I really think we should kind of look at this book and read it as a group. And we had a group of teachers who did. And then when we were talking about it, they're like, oh, this is what it is? I didn't know it was this. I don't want to say it was this easy, but yeah, this makes sense to me now with everything that people are talking about. But this, the way it's explained here, this UDL framework, the way the authors apply here, this makes sense to me.
Oh, I'm so glad. And well, we didn't come up with it. And, you know, we took it from CAST and David Rose and Ann Myers are the ones that really developed it. But it was, I guess, when one thing that Kathleen and I were able to do is to put it in an easy to understand framework.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And make it the lens for learning. And you're fun. You're really fun because anything we seem to share, you turn around and you took it to your kids and then you came back and said, hey, look what I did. And that's why I wanted to talk to you because I thought it was really amazing.
Well, it's good stuff. It's, you know, it's good stuff for learners because it puts them first. It's not stuff where I'm filling in things about students or measuring them along a rubric. It's their voice that it's going into these documents, into their templates. It's not me fitting them into a box. They are saying who they are and what meets their needs. It's ultimately, it's a mirror that they're putting up to themselves and putting into prose what they see in that mirror.
Wow, that's beautiful. You have so many quotes in here. I'm not sure which one I'm going to take for the top, but thank you so much, Mike.
This
just beautiful today. You're just amazing. And here's the thing. I'm not in the classroom. I need to learn from you because you're testing the waters. You're trying things. Kids, you're letting kids have a voice in how they learn, so you can actually tell me how and Kathleen how it works. And if it doesn't work, then you try something else. It's just wonderful.
But it's great, you know, that once you built a good feedback loop with your learners, that it's not me telling you how it goes, it's them telling you how it goes.
you know
that ultimately remove me as the middleman. I can convey stuff, but I'd like the feedback to be their voice.
This is wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for being here today.
You.
This has been wonderful.
It's been a pleasure.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining Rethinking Learning podcast today with Mike Muhammad. And such a wonderful conversation. We'll be bringing more to the blog post when we get this out there, because it was wonderful. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning podcast and my conversation with Mike Muhammad. Make sure you visit barbarabray.net to learn more about Mike and what he's doing in his class. It's so amazing. Look for a complimentary blog post with resources and links, and where you can leave a comment for Mike. These conversations are all part of a bigger picture to transform education. So please leave a review on iTunes and share or retweet the post on Twitter using the hashtag Rethink_learning and at BBray27. Please subscribe to the podcast and the website at barbarabray.net so you can join the conversations.